Thanks, Kristen. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Well, the tech savvy among us were watching the wires this afternoon for what's still considered one of the big technology events of the year.
That's right. It's the release of Apple's new iPhone, or should we say iPhones, plural. This afternoon, Apple revealed two new iPhones, and our producer, Galen Druk, is here to give us a scoop. And it's good to have you over here, Galen.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So what's new with the release of these two new iPhones?
So there weren't that many surprises. What is new is that there are two phones. It's the first time that Apple has, you know, branched off and created different models of an existing product of this product. It's done that with existing products before, like the MacBook and the iPod. But this is the first time they've done it with the iPhone. The other big news points are that the iPhone 5S now has fingerprint scanning technology, and there's also an iPhone 5C, which stands for color, but it is the cheaper one.
Define cheaper.
So it's not actually that much cheaper. This is what most people who were watching for Apple's new release of the iPhone, this is what most people were speculating about, how much would it cost. Because here's really the crux of the story. Most people think that the smartphone industry has sort of done, you know, pretty well in Europe and the United States. And in order for them to make really big profits, they have to appeal to emerging markets. And a $650 phone is not really, you know, within the budget of a lot of people in these emerging markets. So in order to compete with Samsung, they had to create a cheaper phone, you know, that would be more accessible. And this cheaper phone, it turns out, is only $550. So it's a lot of people who are watching this are saying, you know, not really cheap enough to compete. However, the costs are different in the United States because most people in the United States get their phones with a contract. So here in the U.S., the cheaper model of the iPhone color is going to be $99.
I'm curious about the colors. I'm thinking back to the acid orange and electric blue of Apple's. You know, remember when they had those really plastic computers? I remember those colors. What are they now?
Okay, so the iPhone 5, both of them now have new colors. So the iPhone 5 color comes in white, blue, yellow, red, and green. And the iPhone 5S comes in silver, gold, and dark gray. So, you know, you can...
I heard it's called space gray.
Space gray. Really?
Right.
I mean, I believe that sounds plausible.
Roughly when are we going to see these actually on the market?
So they're coming out on September 20th, both of them are, and this is actually the first time for Apple that their launch of the new iPhone is going to be an international event. Usually it comes out in the United States before it comes out in other countries, and they've coordinated across the globe this time.
All right, well, Galen, thanks for stopping by and filling us in.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, today at a press conference at the state capitol, two state senators called for redistricting reform in Wisconsin. Democrat Tim Cullen, Republican Dale Schultz say we should look toward Iowa and adopt their method of putting the process in the hands of a nonpartisan agency.
Joining us now is Jay Heck. He's the executive director of Common Cause in Wisconsin, one of the groups involved in today's press conference. Jay, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, Veronica. Thanks for having me. It's great to be with you and Rob here.
Well, you're in support of reforming the redistricting process in the state. Tell us what's going on with the process we have now. Let's start there and explain what that is.
Well, you know, I think first your listeners need to understand that this is an issue that I don't think many people really thought about very much before this year or even last year. It seems like such an inside the Capitol type of thing. But, you know, what's become evident is that the repercussions of redistricting and how you do it, it just plays so much into whether or not we have competitive elections, even to the behavior of legislators in the Capitol. And the way Wisconsin has done it is the legislature draws the maps. For the last 50 years, we've had split government, so there's always been a compromise, and then it's always gone to the courts. But basically, the maps are drawn by the legislators and their proxies that draw the congressional and the state legislative lines. In 2011, for the first time, you had one party in control of everything, in this case, the Republicans. And what happened was we had a hugely expensive redistricting affair. It's cost Wisconsin taxpayers $2 million so far to do this. We have less competitive congressional districts. In fact, we have zero competitive congressional districts now in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. We have now only 15 of 99 assembly districts that can be considered even remotely competitive, and only 3 of 33 Senate districts. So basically, legislators have chosen their voters rather than the other way around. And as a result of that, citizens don't have much choice at election time, and what they see is increased paralysis, polarization, and acrimony in the Capitol, because the folks that tend to win elections now tend to be of the extremes of their respective parties. And compromise has become a dirty word because legislators and members of Congress don't fear the electorate during a general election because they don't have to worry about being defeated because their districts are no longer competitive. So it's a bad situation, and we're talking about fixing this for 2021.
Which is a long ways away. I mean, this is after the 2020
exactly.
census. I mean, that's way down the road.
And the reason it's vital that we do it now, because with every year that we get closer to 2020 census and then 2021, the more incumbent legislators become protective of their own turf and worried about what a change might look like. You know, in 2013, there's a good chance that many of the legislators who are now in office won't be there. Probably a good chance Governor Walker won't be governor. You'll have completely different people in charge. So it wouldn't affect directly many of the people that would pass this now, but it would be great for Wisconsin beginning in 2021, because it would create a system that made much more sense in terms of having communities of interest together. Competitive elections would be the result of this, and I think you would have a dialing down of the incredible polarization of our politics. And by the way, Wisconsin never used to be this way, and then I think redistricting or the lack of good redistricting is what's caused a lot of the problems that we have now.
And Jay, you said that this was incredibly expensive the way we do it now. Why does it come with such a big price tag, the way that Wisconsin has done it?
One word, lawyers. What happens is the Legislative Reference Bureau, which is a state agency, used to do redistricting reform many years ago. But then the leaders of the legislature decided it would be better to use, or more advantageous to them, to hire outside law firms at $300 or $400 an hour to work behind closed doors in secret and draw hyperpartisan boundaries on districts to advantage the party in power. And the cost to taxpayers to pay those law firms, and then the ensuing lawsuits that come out of those the way they've drawn the lines, cost taxpayers an awful lot of money. And what are they paying for? They're paying for less competitive elections and a more polarized Congress and a more polarized legislature.
Now,
so we got to change it.
As I understand it, this motion to change things about the redistricting process came from editorials that sort of ran in a bunch of Wisconsin's newspapers. Can you give us a real brief history of where this came from?
Sure. Well, the legislation itself began earlier this year, and Senator Dave Hansen of Green Bay, Senator Cullen, Senator Schultz, Common Cause, others sort of united behind one particular reform bill, and we went to the newspapers and we said, look, this is something that's nonpartisan. It would be good for voters. And it was amazing. Three Sundays ago, every newspaper, major newspaper in Wisconsin, on the same day ran editorials not only in support of what we call the Iowa plan, but really more than that, in support of making sure or demanding that the Wisconsin legislature hold a public hearing on this legislation. They won't even do that. They are adamant. They're so opposed to it that, and that's fine. I understand that they're opposed to it, but to deny even a public hearing so that the citizens of Wisconsin have an opportunity to see what this is all about and make up their own minds.
Well, just to give a voice to the opposition here, as I understand it, what Senator Mary Lazick has said is that by putting the redistricting into the hands of a third party, you're removing them from the reach of the voters, and that's a bad thing.
No, in fact, that's ridiculous. Under the plan that we're talking about, the Legislative Reference Bureau works for the legislature, but what they're required to do is draw the lines without partisan consideration under a strict set of criteria. But the legislature still votes on the plan, on the maps, up or down. And to say that legislators are should be held accountable if citizens don't like the maps, well that's ridiculous, because if you've drawn safe districts, no one's going to be defeated if you ask the voters if they were unhappy with a redistricting plan, because they've drawn the districts in such a way that Mary Lazick will never lose, and some of these other people who criticize the system will never lose because they'll never be in a competitive election. So that's the problem, and it actually... Senator Cohen had a very good point. It leads to the arrogance that we have when legislative leaders now say, we're not even going to allow a public hearing, because they have no fear that in a general election they'll have to face any opposition. And the other thing, Veronica, is if you look at the way they've drawn the maps, and by the way, our friends in Illinois, Illinois has done the same thing, only the Democrats are in charge. They have completely gerrymandered the state in such a way that Republicans will never be able to get in power there. And it's the same type of arrogance in Illinois as we have in Wisconsin with the legislative leadership. They have nothing to fear, so they're adamant about not changing this system. It's really unfair for the voters of Wisconsin. And keep in mind, we're looking at 2021, so it's not as if this is going to affect their partisan fortunes right away.
All right, we're going to leave it there for now, and we're going to come back and pick up the conversation as we talk with Jay Heck of Common Cause in Wisconsin about efforts to get redistricting reform off the ground. And we want to hear from you. Would you like to see an agency like the Legislative Reference Bureau handle redistricting instead of the party in power? Or do you think the current process is working for us? You can call 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or send your email to talk@wpr.org. We'll hear from you right after the news. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 5:06, and you're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up in about 10 minutes, we'll be talking with Simply Folk host Stephanie Elkins. She's got some great song suggestions to share with us, and we'll want to hear yours, too.
Right now, we're continuing our conversation with Jay Heck about redistricting reform in Wisconsin, and we want to hear from you.
Are you in support of reforming the process, or do you think the system in place is working just fine? You can give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, or send your email to talk@wpr.org. And Jay, we shouldn't go too much farther without talking about what exactly you're proposing with what's being called the Iowa reform. What does the model look like?
Sure. In Iowa, the redistricting reform is still the province of the Iowa legislature, but the actual map drawing is done by the Legislative Services Bureau, which is the same thing as the Legislative Reference Bureau in Wisconsin. And but the difference is that the Legislative Services Bureau in Iowa is not allowed to use partisan political considerations when they draw the maps, and they have to do things like keep cities and communities of interest together, counties intact if possible. When you look at the map in Iowa, it's a series of squares, a lot of right angles. They're districts that make sense. When you look at Wisconsin or Illinois, you see lizards and salamanders and things reaching out to grab this township or this town for purely partisan reasons. And the way it works in Iowa, and I'm not really sure why the leadership is so frightened of this, is that it's still an up or down vote by the legislature in passing the maps, but they're not allowed to amend them. And if they don't like the first map, then the Legislative Services Bureau draws another map. It does some tweaks. What's remarkable, though, in Iowa, Veronica, is that it's been in place since 1980, so four redistricting processes. It's never gone past a second vote and usually passes on the first vote. And it results in competitive elections, Republicans and Democrats both embrace it in Iowa. The people of Iowa have confidence in the system. They're given choices at election time. There are communities that stay together. You know, the city of Beloit, under this new map, has three different state representatives. They've divided the city, so there's really no Beloit representative. Same with Monroe, Wisconsin.
Well, I guess one question would be, how do we make sure that the independent organization that's drawing the district doesn't become partisan just based on who's running it?
Right, because, well, these are legislative reference bureau. They're civil servants. And as I say, they have to abide by pretty strict criteria. They don't have license to sort of draw maps the way they feel like it. They have to, as I say, keep communities intact, keep counties together if possible, abide by the Voting Rights Act, the Federal Voting Rights Act, and they cannot use partisan considerations. In other words, they may draw the maps in such a way that the hometown of one legislator is not even in that district anymore. But that's how you have to do it, and that's why. And the results, though, speak, I think, for themselves in Iowa. There's great confidence by both political parties and by all of the citizens of Iowa in their system. There's very little confidence in elections in Wisconsin anymore. And I would argue that unless we change the process here in Wisconsin, that you're going to see a continued deterioration of the state of our politics and more polarization. One final point, if you don't have competitive general elections, all the action occurs in primary elections. And in primary elections on both the Democratic and Republican side, the more extreme candidates who are less willing to compromise and move to find a common solution are the ones that are normally elected. And you end up with paralysis and polarization, which is something we're now experiencing in Wisconsin.
I want to go to the callers now and get their voices in on this. Let's take Jerry in La Crosse. Hi, Jerry.
Hello. I'm extremely happy that you are, you know, selling this idea. I think it's one of the most important things for our democracy to I think it moves the political conversation more to the middle, which is where most people are.
Correct.
I am concerned, though, with what rules this committee is given. I mean, if it were me, I would give the committee the rules that every district should be as competitive as possible.
Right.
But it sounds like the rules they're given are somewhat different. Could you go into that in more detail?
All right. Well, thank you, Jerry.
Sure. And it's a great question. In Iowa, the competitiveness is not a direct goal. It's the result. And I think that's what you want to strive for in Wisconsin, because the problem is that if you begin to draw districts so that they are only competitive, but don't keep communities of interest intact, you don't keep towns together with their suburbs, and the districts don't make sense, then you also end up with lizards and salamanders and that type of stuff. But the result, if you do it with no political consideration involved, is that the elections are more competitive. And again, the case in Iowa demonstrates that, whereas we have only 15 of 99 assembly districts that are remotely competitive, the figure's closer to 30 of lesser assembly districts in Iowa. Half of their congressional districts are competitive, zero, none of Wisconsin's are. So it's a tricky question. I think it would be a much harder rock to push uphill, though, if we were to adopt that competitive criteria.
All right, I want to go back to the phones now, and let's take David with us in Madison. Hi, David.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the time. I appreciate the good effort of your guest. However, if you would indulge me, please, I actually ran in Iowa in a congressional election. I was the Democratic nominee for the 2nd District of Iowa for the U.S. House of Representatives in 2004. I ran against an old-time moderate Republican by the name of Jim Leach, who was a wonderful man and is now the National Endowment for the Humanities chair and a visiting professor teaching a course at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Mm-hmm. However, the recent note, and I know I was stumped by Jim Leach, but I was the last person to lose to Jim.
Yeah, he lost that to the next election, yeah.
he lost the very next one after a fellow who had, I had held the local elective office. The fellow who ran after me and won had never had any office. He followed me around the last 2 months in 04, and so, you know, the grassroots thing worked in the wave election was 06. But the point on the redistrict is this.
Mm-hmm.
I've read recently the Wisconsin State Journal, others, now this guest here, saying that the Iowa plan is it would be a great improvement. I beg to differ, and here's why. It's not a panacea. In fact, would there be more competitive elections, a fair process? Some of the time, yes. The Iowa, the analog to the Legislative Bureau of Wisconsin in Iowa basically turns it over to University of Iowa geography people, and they keep counties intact, and they make the most sensible geographic, not competitive, as your guest said correctly, but geographic, districts, not just for the Congress, but also for the Iowa legislature at both the House and Senate levels. What happens is, though, is that this does not, there are, as he correctly stated, there are two cracks at it. They come up with two possibilities, and the legislature and the governor can say yes or no, all or none, on the two possibilities. If it goes to the third round, it goes to the legislature right where it is in Wisconsin. And the only reason that it's worked going the first couple of cracks with what the geography people have written in Iowa is since this new system in Iowa has been instituted, one house has been in control during the redistrict of one party, and the other house in the other party.
All right, we're going to have to leave that there, David. I'm sorry, we're just about out of time. And Jay, I want to get your response on this, but we've got just about a minute left.
Well, it's a great response, but one thing that the caller, and he's right, I think, on almost everything he said, but it was passed in 1980 with full Republican control of both houses of the legislature and a Republican governor. And the reason it works in Iowa is there's great fear to not abide by the system and try to step outside of it and say, you know, I want this to be more partisan. The people of Iowa have grown to expect a system that makes sense geographically with a resultant, more competitive elections. Iowa's not perfect, but it is a vast improvement over what we have here in Wisconsin. And I'm frankly excited about the fact that this is now a conversation and there are many people talking about it that never gave it any thought a year ago, and as the Appleton Post-Crescent said in their editorial, we're not going away. The papers aren't going away. We're not going away. We'll continue to press for this, and we'll tweak it and come up with the best system that we can before 2021.
All right, Jay, well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
We've been talking to Jay Heck, Executive Director of Common Cause in Wisconsin.
Coming up next, we'll talk to the host of WPR's Simply Folk. She's got some great songs to share, and we'll ask for your recommendations as well. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.